This KFK podcast is presented by Bank of Colorado. Honesty, integrity, hard work. It's the way you live and the way we bank. Bank of Colorado has been a family-owned, community-focused bank for generations and will be here for generations to come. Bank of Colorado. There's only one. Member FDIC.
Horrifying news story.
I don't know if this is the kind of hard-hitting news you're used to.
Got some good news and I got some bad news.
Now this could be the big story of the summer. Network is going to be wanting plenty of coverage.
What do you mean, silly? I mean, that's real news.
All right, the Los Angeles Clippers lost last night to the Golden State Warriors. Steph Curry just doing Steph Curry things. Meanwhile, Kawhi Leonard, people are wondering what the future is with Kawhi Leonard with the Clippers. He's eligible, starting on the day after the NBA Finals, to extend his contract for two additional seasons. According to ESPN's Bobby Marks, the maximum the Clippers can offer is $126.1 million over the next two seasons. But you also have a few things going on. Like the NBA launched an ongoing investigation into Leonard's deal with Aspiration in September. That was that whole, like, endorsement deal, maybe helping out with some of his basically promise to him to help give him more money on his regular contract. I've wondered why that doesn't happen more and more. He was asked Wednesday night whether he knew the status of that investigation and how important a resolution would be for him. Leonard said, "I never thought about it too much other than questions asked. You'll have to ask the NBA, not me. I'm not the one doing the investigation. I think we're going to be in the clear. I'm not stressing it." That one's a fascinating one to follow. Tanner's going to love this story. The Dodgers shattered Major League Baseball spending record with a combined $515 million in payroll and luxury tax last year en route to their second straight World Series title, according to ESPN. The final figures were compiled by the commissioner's office in Los Angeles, is projected for the highest total again in 2026. Do you, like, feel good when you win titles after that? Because it's like you just paid everybody. You just bought the title. You literally went and bought your titles.
Yeah, but Milwaukee was, like, the 19th in spending.
Okay.
And didn't they get to the World Series? They're number 19th.
Yeah, Milwaukee would feel better about that. And also, it's not like the Dodgers don't have great players that they bring up through their system, too. There's plenty of those guys, too. So it's a mixed bag when talking about the Dodgers. The Las Vegas Raiders are still expected to keep their first pick and take quarterback Fernando Mendoza during the 2026 draft. But teams are still calling them off the hook about the possibility of trading the top choice. Wouldn't you? You just signed Kirk Cousins to a five-year deal. I think this is an opportunity for the Raiders to get rich here and trade that pick. Now, I would have said, yeah, heck yeah, for the Raiders, draft Fernando Mendoza until you not only picked up Kirk Cousins, but you signed him to a five-year deal. You really believe that this guy's going to be a major part of your team going forward. Now, Kirk Cousins, as we talked about last week or 2 weeks ago, is definitely more in the clear thinking of what his role will possibly be with the Raiders than he was with the Falcons. He was unaware that they were going to draft Michael Penix Jr. during that time. He was told in Atlanta, I believe, or he was misled, that he was going to be the guy, and then they draft Michael Penix Jr., and he's wondering if he is the guy. So it was a weird relationship from the get-go. With the Raiders, he said, no, full disclosure, like, they told me their plan, and I'm in for it. Well, he's got a lot of money from it. He signed pretty monster deal with the Raiders. So would you trade the pick, or would you still draft Fernando Mendoza?
I mean, for that money, I would trade the pick. And I'd wait for a different... I'd wait a different year.
You don't sign Kirk Cousins to a 5-year deal with that kind of money if you don't plan on him starting for the first year, probably the second year too.
I would start him, yes. Absolutely, I'd have him as starter. I would do kind of the Aaron Rodgers and the Jordan Love thing where they both sat and then they both started. Like, they both benefited from that. So I'm absolutely for that. I just think the amount of money is ridiculous. I would have done, if you're going to overpay him for 2 years.
Right. Do a 2-year contract. I don't know why they did a 5-year contract.
Because they're the Raiders and they're stupid.
Very stupid idea, yes. The NFL has started onboarding potential replacement officials as the expiration of its collective bargaining agreement with the NFL Referees Association approaches. Clubs were informed Wednesday, according to ESPN, in a memo from Perry Faywell, the league's senior vice president of officiating. Several replacements have completed background checks with NFL security, according to the memo, and they will soon be given physical examinations. Online and in-person training sessions with the league officiating supervisors are scheduled to begin on or near May 1st.
Have they been given talent?
Like, do we know who it is yet?
Well, I mean, there are some referees out there who are just the worst.
Yeah, I don't know.
And we need to make sure that the NFL doesn't get the worst.
I don't honestly know. There's not a lot of information yet on who these referees are going to be. I mean, if they're coming out of college, if they're coming out of side leagues, NFL stuff, or NFL, I don't know.
I don't care where they come from. I don't care if it's Air Bud. I want a clean game.
Well, that's why they're doing this early. You know, last time we had this happen, they didn't start getting guys on board until like July, I think. So we're 2 months ahead of schedule on that, so they have plenty of time to brush up on the rules and how to officiate an NFL game.
Yeah, and they finally have a guy up in the booth. Maybe they'll have more decision-making for the guy up in the booth.
Maybe.
Maybe they'll put the smart guy up in the booth.
How about this one? Another ridiculous decision, I think, and I know there's going to be some Lakers fans and Pistons fans that disagree with me, but according to ESPN, the Los Angeles Lakers guard Luka Doncic and Detroit Pistons guard Cade Cunningham, both amazing players, they will now be eligible. They were not eligible before because they didn't play 65 games. They will be eligible for end-of-season awards after the NBA and the National Basketball Players Association agreed Thursday that both of them would be allowed to bypass the 65-game threshold for eligibility requirements. Under the league's collective bargaining agreement, there's an extraordinary circumstances clause that a player can use the petition to make the ballot if he falls short of the 60-game minimum. Quote here, the NBA and the NBPA agreed that, taking into account the totality of the circumstances for Cunningham and Doncic, each player qualified for awards. Doncic played 64 games. He missed 2 games in December due to traveling for the birth of his child abroad. Cunningham played in 63 games. He missed 12 games after suffering a collapsed lung in mid-March. Both very unique circumstances. But isn't that the rule? Like, I guess they have a extraordinary clause thing or whatever. Extraordinary circumstances. But then, and here's me sticking up for Anthony Edwards. Anthony Edwards, who played 60 games, also appealed. The arbitrator denied Edwards' case, and he will not be eligible for end-of-season awards. I'm fine with changing the rule to 60 or whatever, but right now, that's not right.
That's suspicious.
That's not right.
Brady, we need to change the rule for the Colorado Broadcasters Association Talk Show Host Award, because I want to win an award without
changing a game rule in the middle of the game. Like, this is what you agreed to. This is what we've said. You got to play 65. If you have a kid during that time, if your lung collapses, that sucks. It's unfortunate. But that was the rule. And now, because these players appealed and they're getting it changed, well, Luka missed it for a kid. And Cunningham missed it because he had a collapsed lung. Those are all unfortunate things that happened. And that should have us have deeper discussions in the offseason. Just lowering the threshold or what have you. But you can't spring this on at the end of the season. The season's over. We're already in the play-in tournament. Like, would Joker have played that final game on Sunday? If he could have appealed, they could have appealed and said, yeah, Joker never gets hurt. He's never missed more than like three games in a season, and he missed almost a month of basketball. Should he get a pass because he's always like durable? Then it just becomes subjective. Well, yeah, but Anthony Edwards, what was his deal? Like a leg something? It wasn't a collapsed lung. So now it's, now we're going to go based on the type of health situation you have going on. I don't agree with it. I do think we should change the rule. I don't think it should be 65 games. It should probably be closer to 60. But changing it after, like, the season's over, and here we go. I'm not in love with it. I think it's another stupid move that the NBA, that Adam Silver has made to appease two of their top stars, Luka being one of their more consistent stars, and Cade Cunningham certainly up and coming as one of the top stars in the NBA. And then you're not going to allow Anthony Edwards. His is not going to appeal. So now we're saying, you know, a regular sports injury doesn't count, but if your lung collapses or if you have to go see the birth of your child, then you can have an opportunity to appeal this and win. This is ridiculous.
Yeah, you gotta wait for the start of next year. You can't do it
you
for this year because someone flopped.
And they're also eligible for All NBA awards too. So like the All NBA team. So it's not just the MVP because like Luka and Cade Cunningham, neither one of those guys is going to win the MVP, but they will be eligible for the All NBA awards, first team, and such. And Luka's probably a shoe-in for that. Cade Cunningham's probably a shoe-in for that. I get it. They both had phenomenal seasons, but you set the rule, and these are. Aren't all injuries extreme circumstances? I mean, if a guy breaks his leg, I mean, aren't all injuries extreme? Or any kind of health issue you might have, isn't all? Couldn't we argue all of that is extreme?
Sorry, basketball, but this is what you get when you have egos running the league.
Well, the thing
egos
of it
run
is,
the
is
league,
like
therefore
Cunningham,
you get this crap.
Cade Cunningham's like, he's a real one. I like Cade Cunningham, and I don't know if Luka's necessarily like bitching all the time, but obviously they both appealed. So I don't understand it. Eastside Chris says, so Embiid still has a chance? No, he's not going to win one of those. If he won one of those appeals, we'd lose our minds. 17 minutes after the hour. Coming up next, we're going to catch up with the Coloradoans, Kevin Lytle, get our latest scoop on all things Colorado State. Don't go anywhere. It's the whole show powered by Mosquito Joe of Northern Colorado. We're on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 at 1310 KFKA.
Avalanche in the playoffs is no small thing. Just how far will they go? Hear Avs games and coverage on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
This is Adam Matas with DNVR, the DNVR Bar, and the DNVR Nuggets podcast, and you're listening to The Whole Show with Brady Hull.
Colorado State had their spring spotlight last week, and we'll confirm with Kevin about to wrap up spring ball here. Joining me now, the Kevin Lytle from the Fort Collins, Colorado, and he is our CSU Rams insider. Kevin, my friend, first off, I always read your stuff, and you put out something over the weekend, you know, 9 guys that kind of stood out to you. And I was thinking, okay, the top guy on this list is the one to watch, Mel Brown, the running back. So tell me more about this guy and what we can expect from him next season.
Yeah, really excited about Mel Brown. I've had a couple people compare him a bit to Dalen Dawkins, early Bobo era standout, and I can't disagree too hard. He's, undersized, smaller. You know, of course, we don't know that because CSU doesn't list heights and weights anymore, but my eyes tell me that. But he runs hard physically, but speed outside. He's also a very good kick returner, so he'll bring that as well. So I think he's going to be a really exciting player. I I'm sure I've mentioned before that I really like the running back room, and that's, you know, very true. But Mel is definitely going to be one of those top guys out of that room. So, yeah, I think we're going to see a lot of him in the fall.
And he's one of those guys that followed Coach Jim Mora, too, from UConn, right?
Yep, exactly. I think he had some injuries last year, if I'm remembering correctly, but has played there a couple of years, had some pretty good success. Like I said, kick return success as well. And, yeah, he wanted to follow Mora, and I think he's going to be in line for a pretty big role.
I'm excited about this guy. Okay, talk to us a little bit more about other guys that stood out. Obviously, the tight end room, they're just massive dudes, first off. And you got a guy on there that's leading the brigade named Juice. I mean, if that doesn't say, you know, something good's about to happen with that room, I don't know what does.
I was going to say, I mean, a pretty cool name for, you know, if a guy's going to end up pretty good, Juice Vereen. Another one that followed from UConn. He's also been at NC State, I believe. But he's one of those kind of your classic tight end nightmare for defenses of he's going to be too quick for, you know, linebacker, too big for a defensive back to cover. So it's going to be quite a challenge for opposing defenses. I think he's going to be in for a big year. And then along with him, Dominic Toy, another really big tight end. I could see him being a, you know, really strong player, you know, one of those potential box out red zone type receiving threats. So yeah, I think both that running back and that receiver room are two of the ones that really jump out to me as quite good.
Kevin Lytle joining us from the Coloradoan. Where are we at on this quarterback competition, Kevin? Obviously, Haas Haney, that was the big name. It still is the big name, but it was kind of like when that guy announced he was going to be a Ram, it seemed like it was going to be his job, but there's been a couple of guys in the mix here, at least one guy in particular.
Yeah, it's been a very real competition here in camp between Haas Haney and Kasan Farrar, who followed Mora and company from UConn. Both are, you know, young, basically redshirt freshmen. Haas, it's technically his third year in college, but, you know, he got hurt in the first quarter of his first start last year, so he didn't play, you know, much at all last year. But they're, so, you know, they have some similarities, but some differences at quarterback. I'm really intrigued to see how it plays out. I don't expect Mora is going to name, at least publicly name, a starter here at the end of spring. I think he'll go into fall camp. But I think it's a pretty intriguing battle there.
I liked what we had Jim Mora on the show on Monday, Kevin, and I liked what he said, you know, where he's like, hey, when we make the decision, we're not going to be messing around with multiple quarterbacks. One guy comes in for a little bit or certain packages. That guy's going to be the guy until he proves he's not the guy, and then the other guy comes in. I know that's obvious with a lot of teams, but sometimes I just like to hear it because I'm not a big fan of the interchanging quarterback situation.
Yeah, I think there are some situations where it can work. Obviously, that, you know, the Taj package didn't go well for CSU last year. I think that was more about the usage of it, you know, and timing than, you know, Taj or just the general idea. But I think it makes sense here because, like I say, I'm not saying these quarterbacks are carbon copies, but they do a lot of similar things of, you know, they're kind of dual threat guys of they can get out of the pocket and keep a play going. You know, I think Haas is probably the more electric runner, but Kasan definitely can. And then, you know, their passing game, I don't think there's necessarily a clear, like, difference. So it wouldn't make sense to mix and match because the idea of, you know, the package or whatever is to do something totally different, and these guys wouldn't do it. So, yeah, I think it makes sense and, you know, seems logical to me of whenever they do pick who that number one is. Again, because they're young quarterbacks, you should give them a run. I mean, we're going to see some inconsistency. You know, I think CSU fans should be prepared for that because they're young quarterbacks. I think we're going to see some pretty electric play, but there are probably going to be some downs too because that's what you get with young quarterbacks. But to me, yeah, it makes sense of once you pick your guy, go try and make a pretty good you know, run of games with that one.
Kevin, who else kind of caught your eye this last couple of weeks or so? And I know the spring spotlight, you know, Coach even told you, like, hey, we kind of kept it vanilla for the most part. But what have you kind of learned more about more of these guys that are sticking out over the last couple of weeks?
Yeah, you know, on defense, Diamande is the one that really jumps out. He can do a bit of everything. And, you know, that's what we expected when he committed to CSU because, you know, you look at what he did at UConn, the numbers are great. He had several pretty legit Power Four offers this offseason too, and stuck with Mora. So he is a guy that's going to be really good there. You know, the receivers I'm intrigued by, because I don't know who the best one is, which maybe it's good that there's depth and balance and different weapons, or maybe it's a question mark because you don't have a clear number one. You know, I'm not sure, honestly. But, you know, Levon Brown, you know, one of the holdovers, he's had a good camp. Tommy Maher has had good camp. He's a guy that I think, if he's in the slot, can be dangerous. And then some of the newcomers, too. You know, Terrence Smith, I'm really intrigued by, kind of a gadget player at UConn. He's like a blazing speed guy that I believe also played quarterback in high school. So, you know, maybe there's a trick play in there involved as well. So that receiver room is just really interesting to me, because if you're going to say who has the most catches amongst the receivers, I would not know how to answer.
Tommy Maher is an interesting one, Kevin. That guy, you know what? He's just like a survivor. He just keeps, yep, he keeps hanging around. And I keep thinking, hang around long enough and maybe something special is going to happen.
Yeah, and, you know, he was probably miscast last year. They probably used him too much on the outside. That was probably a variety of reasons. But I think if he's in the slot, he can be a pretty dangerous guy. You know, we maybe will see him on some punt returns too, which he did a bit last year for some of last year. But yeah, both him and LeVon, you know, LeVon, I couldn't believe when I was writing, I was like, wait, man, this is fourth year at CSU? Mm. Like, holy cow, that jumped out at me, because I was thinking him as, you know, kind of a young receiver. But yeah, those guys, you know, Tommy's now entering his third year. Maybe it's because we get it so rarely now,
right,
that when a guy's here 3 or 4 years, it almost like jumps at you like, whoa, wait, what? You know, I just kind of assume everyone's new. And then when they're not, it sort of stuns you.
Oh, yeah, no question. I'm actually more surprised now when we get a guy that's been there, like you said, for, you know, 2+ years.
Yeah, totally. I mean, guys, you know, you look at basketball, like Kyle Jorgensen will be here for his third year next season. So by December next year, we're going to be like, gosh, what is this guy doing playing his seventh year? Because it's so rare, because these rosters, I mean, by the time the football team takes the field, September 5th or whatever that is, I think it's going to be about 70 players on the roster are different from the roster last year, which is just wild.
Kevin, what have you kind of, other than the standout players, you know, now, I mean, it's spring, are their spring practices done yet, or do they have one more to go?
They have one more. They go tomorrow morning to finish it out.
Okay, tomorrow morning. So we're almost done with spring. You've gotten a chance to really get to know what this team might potentially look like coming up this fall with Yamora. What has been, has there been a major difference that you're seeing in how practices are run, or just the differences between the coaches?
Yeah, I think a few of the things when people have asked, I highlight just pace. It clips along. There's not a lot of standing around, idle time. I'd say a lot of kind of team drills, you know, as far as 11-11 or 9-on-9, stuff like that. They certainly do individual work, but I would say there's maybe less of that and more of the group team competition. Within those, it's always good on good, you know, ones versus ones, twos versus twos, whereas Norvell did, and a lot of coaches do, would, you know, sometimes mix it. The one offense plays the two defense, or vice versa, stuff like that. It's pretty much all top on top against each other for Mora. Those are a few things. And there's some interesting kind of individual drills and stuff, like, this is super minutia, but when they're doing kicking drills, they actually have two different kick units lined up. So you'll have one, you know, at like the 20-yard line, another one at like the 35-yard line, to basically kick almost simultaneously, which I'm assuming is just a time efficiency move, but just stuff like that. You know, there's just a lot of little details there. And, you know, Jim Mora is intense. He wants it done right every time by everyone, whether it's, you know, whatever, support staff or players. He will let people know if he's not happy how it is, that's for sure.
Kevin, when do you start, like, diving in more? Because, again, there's going to be so much to learn about the new Pac-12 teams. Yeah, obviously, you're all in on what's going on with CSU. You're telling us everything there. But when will you start kind of giving us an idea of what we can expect from the rest of this conference and where CSU might stack up?
Yeah, it's a good question. Probably early in fall, the good thing, quote-unquote, at least from my perspective as far as analyzing teams, is we don't have the spring portal anymore. So we do know rosters are pretty much set. There's some tinkering. You can add some JUCO guys or late high school signees, but for the most part, the rosters are set, which helps because, you know, the last, whatever it's been, 3-4 years, we would be heading in right now to, well, how many guys are they going to lose? You know, what's this going to look like? So that helps of, you know, you can start looking at every team, but still really tricky because, you know, CSU is not in a rare spot here. We could pull any Pac-12 team and say, oh, they have 50 new players. They have 45 new players. And so, yeah, you can look at what some of those guys did at previous schools, but it's really hard to guess and judge, you know, fit at a new spot. And this is why I've kind of been banging the drum of, man, these preseason polls and stuff are just really, really hard to do because you just don't know. I mean, a player that was good at one place won't be good at another. Player that did nothing at one place will be great at another, and it's just really hard to project.
Well, speaking of hard to project, Kevin, based on what you've seen from this team, give me the strength, the clear-cut strength of this team. Now, that might change. I get it. But when you're looking at this group, because you mentioned a bunch of different players from a bunch of different positions, but what in your mind would be the strength going into next fall?
Yeah, I mean, positionally, I think it's those running backs and tight ends. And overall, I think the offense is going to be able to score. The defense, for me, is harder to judge, not negatively or positively, just because I feel they have more, you know, kind of important guys that haven't been able to participate this spring as they recover from some offseason, you know, injuries and surgeries and whatnot. So defense is a little harder for me to judge. But I do think the offense is going to be able to score it at a pretty good rate.
I'm pumped. I'm ready to go. You know, we caught up with Jim on Monday, and again, you're out there. I've only been out to one practice. I could tell you nothing about, other than what I'm reading from the Kevin Lytle, what this team's going to look like. But there's just this new vibe anytime you get that with a new coach. And sometimes you get a new coach and then you can get stale pretty quickly. We've had some of those in the past, Kevin, but it seems like the excitement is still about as high as you can get around this program.
Yeah, I think if I'm a CSU fan, what I would be happy about is there's nothing, you know, we're talking about all the new players and all that, but anytime, you know, that newness has been brought up, Moore and company shoot it down pretty quick. You know, he said after day one, you know, don't give me this year one stuff. I don't care about that. You know, we're here to win. And that's kind of been the message from all the coaches and everyone, you know, some players I've talked to as well, that they are here fully expecting to win right away. So they don't seem to be leaning into that. Well, you know, a lot of new players, so it's going to take some time. In this era of college football, that's just what it is. So, you know, it's not a four-year build anymore.
Kevin, last one for you, man. I did see that Kyan Evans made a visit to Minnesota. Will we be seeing him reunite with Nico Medved?
Yeah, you know, I think that's very possible. The next day he was at Iowa. Obviously Iowa had a kind of dramatic run to what, Sweet 16 or Elite Eight, somewhere in there. A really good run. So I think he has plenty of options, but yeah, I mean, if you force me a pick, I'd say I won't be surprised if he's at Minnesota.
Yeah, that sounds like it'd probably be the perfect fit for him. Obviously, I'd like to see him with Ali and here at CSU, but that would be tough, wouldn't it? You know, it's kind of almost like you're tucking your tail between your legs. That would be difficult for a player to kind of overcome. Maybe that wouldn't be the mindset of the fan base, but that would be tough to kind of say, hey, I failed, whatever. I didn't make it over here at North Carolina, but I'm back to play with the Rams again. That would be a difficult thing for a young guy.
Yeah, you know, you can't go home again, the old phrase and whatnot. It would be tough because I think fans would welcome him back. I don't think there'd be any bad blood there. But I do think there would potentially be some maybe unrealistic expectations from fans as well, which could be quite a burden on him. Because if you remember his big year here, you know, he was the understudy or the wingman to Nick Clifford. And then obviously the year before that, he was truly the understudy to Zay. So that could be a weird, awkward pressure. I mean, obviously CSU and CSU fans probably would be happy to try and see how it worked. But I think in a lot of ways, you know, a Minnesota maybe just makes the most sense for everyone.
Yeah, Kevin, great stuff from you as always, man. You've been grinding, getting us great information too. I love when you put these together for us, available to Colorado, when you have the complete details on Colorado State men's basketball's roster changes too. Guys that have left, guys that are staying, the guys that left, where they're going. So outstanding work from you yet again, my friend.
Yeah, appreciate that. It's a slower off season of change for the Men's Hoops team, so that's kind of nice too. It's easier for people to figure out that roster.
Yeah, you didn't really anticipate a lot of change. I think everything has kind of happened how you thought it was going to happen, but there were certainly fans that were wondering if there were going to be a lot more new looks for Ali, but for the most part, pretty much the same group with some new additions coming in.
Yep, definitely. Kept the main core and probably most of the main guys you want. So yeah, I think they're in good shape.
All right, my man. We'll catch up with you next week. Always look forward to these chats and keep grinding, my friend.
Sounds great. Thank you.
All right, Kevin Lytle of the Fort Collins, Coloradoan. All right, so he's optimistic about the offense and still a big question mark on the defensive side of the ball. So, yeah, we'll see, man. It was a fun conversation with Kevin, as always. Fun conversation on Monday with Jim Moore. What did you think of that chat, Mike? Anything stand out to you? It's not like that interview is not going to be breaking news or anything, but, you know, it was nice for us to just get that first interview out of the way. Not that I wasn't looking forward to it, but once you get to know the coach and once you follow the team a little bit more, it's easier to have those conversations. Thoughts on the interview, Mike? 10 plus, A plus?
C-minus? He did great.
Yeah, he was good. It was the questions.
You know, I have to say one thing is it's nice to have a coach that has energy. There are a lot of coaches out there that are just kind of, two-word answer.
We didn't have that with Jay. Jay was good. Jay was a good interview.
But you know my thoughts on Jay and
because of his Raiders background.
About Al Davis.
Well, Jim Mora has a Washington background, so he should be like your favorite coach the Rams have ever had in the history of the world.
He is.
Is he really?
That's number one. Because of the Washington background.
Over Steve Addazio? I'm going to have you rank CSU coaches. Of the coaches when I started covering the Colorado State Rams.
I like Bobo's
okay.
name.
Okay. I think Steve Fairchild was there right before I started. And then didn't it go Jim McElwain, Mike Bobo, Steve Addazio, Jay Norvell, Jim Mora. Rank those coaches for me. 1 through 5.
Oh, don't make me think.
Well, number one's got to be Jim Mora, right? Washington.
Obviously.
Mike Bobo's got to be number 2 because you like his name.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
Number 3's got to be Jim McElwain because he was a stud.
And then...
Doing your job for you, man. And then... Steve Fairchild over Steve Addazio. I like Fairchild because he did a segment with us for a long time. We talked quarterbacks every Monday.
Okay.
That's my rankings. I just gave you my rankings. There you go.
And then last place, Norvell, because he said
Did I leave Norvell out? Okay, I can't leave Norvell out of there.
Well, he said something nice about Al Davis.
Do your stupid little fanboy stuff somewhere else. Norvell is above Addazio and Fairchild, obviously. How did I forget that? Norvell or Bobo?
Bobo.
Because of his name?
No, because of the stupid fanboy stuff.
Bobo was more consistent. You know, he had 3 seasons of 7 wins, and they were going to bowl games. So Bobo gets the nod over Jay.
But they weren't good bowl games.
Doesn't matter. It's better to go than not to go, right? Even if I'm not watching.
Yeah, I mean, my team has gone to some, the water balloon bowl games. Brought to you by chips.
The water balloon bowl brought to you by chips.
I don't know.
Wow. So all the chip companies just pooled their money together and sponsored the bowl game?
Yeah.
The water balloon bowl brought to you by chips.
It was the California Highway Patrol.
Okay. Thank you. I actually like the water balloon bowl brought to you by chips better. That one's even better.
Well, the California Highway Patrol. You remember the old show Chips?
Okay, I see what you're doing now. 41 minutes after the hour. Let's get the latest on the local sports flash.
There's only one sound like the key tumbling the lock open for the first time. One feeling like finally seeing your place after you've emptied all the moving boxes. That moment when 4 walls and a roof become the home you've always wanted. If you're on the search for that special place, we're the community bank that'll help you get there. Bank of Colorado. There's only one. Member FDIC. Equal housing lender.
This is Cato June, All-Pro linebacker, Super Bowl champion. You're listening to 1310 KFKA.
Well, Welcome back into the whole show. On the Rocks Liquor, they have the beverage of the week for you. It's the new Angry Orchard Summer Crush Variety 12-pack. This limited series will make you fall in love with Angry Orchard all over again. With four new flavors like Tropical Storm and Berry Smash, these won't last long. So make sure you get over to On the Rocks Liquor today. And, hey, they're rolling out all their summer stuff. I know it's still spring, technically, but they're starting to roll out the summer lineup. And you can go try a bunch of different things from the top brands, from big breweries in this area, local breweries, at On the Rocks Liquor for their free wine and beer tastings every Friday, 4 o'clock to 7. First Advantage text line is 888-530-0043. Listen, man, there's plenty of X factors I can think of for the Nuggets in this series against the Timberwolves. The Nuggets should win the series. They should. Michael's got a sweep. Picks are on Friday for me. Everybody knows that. Sean Keeler told us yesterday from the Denver Post that he thinks this thing's going seven. Whew, that's going to be a tight, nerve-wracking series, Michael, and you just don't want to wear out in that first round. But I think one of the guys to pay attention to. I've got a bunch. I mean, obviously, I think Jamal Murray has to be the Jamal Murray we've seen all year. I think the bench unit is going to be critical because it really came up short for the Nuggets almost, you know, most of those years outside of the year that they won the NBA championship. And even then, it was like it was two or three guys deep. There wasn't a ton of dudes that were performing in a big way when they won that thing. So I do think like the bench unit is going to be critical for Denver. But I, you know, one of the guys I'm looking at the most, again, going back to that bench, it was pretty much, because remember, Christian Brown was coming off the bench that year. That was his rookie season. He was a bench player. He and Bruce Brown and Jeff Green were primarily the guys coming off and actually giving you meaningful minutes. And even Jeff Green wasn't playing a ton, so it was really the Browns there. So you didn't have a lot. So I do think that bench is going to be huge. Bruce Brown, Tim Hardaway Jr., Jonas Valanciunas, Peyton Watson, assuming he's healthy. Hopefully we can get an update on his health coming up. But Cam Johnson, the man to replace Michael Porter Jr. And as we all know, it was not a straight-up trade. It wasn't just, oh, well, the Nuggets didn't want Michael Porter Jr. anymore. They wanted Cam Johnson. They couldn't bring in Tim Hardaway Jr. and Bruce Brown and Jonas Valanciunas if Porter was still on this team. And I think that would be... that could potentially be a difference maker in this series coming up. But I think Cam's going to be big. You know, he ended up shooting one of his best three-point percentages was this year, 43%. He only had 1 year better, and that was his final year in Phoenix when he shot 45% from the three-point line. So Cam got a lot of knocks early. He wasn't gelling with the team. Then he got hurt, and then it took him a while. And then he talked about kind of him being down on himself. And there were a lot of Nuggets fans wondering if he was going to get it back, both physically and between the ears. And I think it's fair to say this guy has stepped up in a big way. They're going to be trying to shut down Joker in the paint. So it is going to come down to guys like Cam Johnson, who might not get as much attention from Minnesota's defense as a Jamal Murray or an Aaron Gordon or a Joker or even Christian Brown, who has that slasher mentality. I think Cam's going to be the guy that if they have to leave somebody open, he might find himself open more often than not. He's going to have to knock him down. So Cam Johnson, big series coming up for him, big playoffs coming up for him. Is he going to be traded to make room for Peyton Watson? I'll tell you what, if this guy lights it up and he's one of the reasons they win a championship, some decisions are going to have to be made. 12:50 the time. We'll wrap up hour number one. New segment coming up here at 1 o'clock. Michael, the clip of the day. We'll play it for you and we'll discuss. We'll give you our thoughts on it. Clip of the day coming up very, very soon. It's the whole show powered by Mosquito Joe of Northern Colorado.
The Broncos, the Nuggets, the Avalanche, the Rockies, the NCAA, and the NFL, and KFKA. And we aren't changing anytime soon. We have the sports broadcast you need on Northern Colorado's voice. 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
This is Chris Abshire for Collins, Colorado, and you are listening to the whole show on 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
All right, we don't have a lot of time here. Clip of the day coming up next. Keep it here on the whole show. We'll be right back.
This KFK podcast is presented by Bank of Colorado. Honesty, integrity, hard work. It's the way you live and the way we bank. Bank of Colorado has been a family-owned, community-focused bank for generations and will be here for generations to come. Bank of Colorado. There's only one. Member FDIC.